Welcome to Real Estate and Beyond. Today, I have the pleasure of interviewing Rebecca Larea from MI Mortgage. Welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yay. We survived the hurricane, huh?
We did. Yeah. Well, we're alive.
We'll
say that. You know, if you're new to Florida, then welcome. You've had your initiation.
Yes, thank you. That was awesome. So they're saying that was like a 100-year storm and it's not likely to recur. So that was pretty bad.
Yeah, it really was. And you know what was so odd to me is I was reading that there was another hurricane, Helene, that was like the same category that hit landfall the same day in like the late 50s.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, that's creepy.
Yeah.
That's a little
creepy. I don't know what's going on. We can get real existential with it because it's like, you know, sometimes are these natural disasters, are they like a reflection of like the global consciousness and where we are in the world? Like, I don't know if you believe in that kind of stuff, but it's definitely, water is not something to mess with. But then I've never lived in another state that has like an earthquake or, you know, something like that. So I wouldn't know how to be prepared for something like that. But
well, that's the thing. You can't prepare for an earthquake, yeah. But you can prepare for a hurricane.
Right.
Except some people don't. And yours truly totally failed to properly prepare for it. So here we are.
I know. Well, and you know, a lot of areas where I'm talking to a lot of people, I've had a lot of people reaching out and, you know, they're living in places that haven't been hit or flooded for 20 plus years, 40 plus years. So it was really kind of an anomaly, but I hate to see the devastation, not only in Florida, but other states like Western North Carolina. And so really, you know, sending prayers and helping where we can. It's going to be a long road ahead.
Well, let's talk about how that impacts real estate and mortgages as well. So let's talk first about the flood damage to the homes if you were already under contract to sell your home or to buy one.
Yeah, well, then you're probably not going to be selling or buying that particular home right now. A lot of contracts, a lot of homes, a lot of listings have been impacted, right? Because when you go for a mortgage, the home has to be in livable condition. We have to have the appraisal. We have to have the flood insurance in place. And so as you can imagine, in the middle of a flood claim at the very beginning, you know what I mean? There's going to be a lot of things and that need to happen in a certain order before you're going to get the house back in shape to sell or buy another one, you know, whether you work with a public adjuster or find one to help you navigate the insurance process. Certainly if you are a homeowner or someone under contract, really relying on your trusted team, your real estate advisor, your lender, and certainly your insurance agent is going to be critical because that's why we're here to help you navigate that stuff.
But this also impacts properties that are under contract that were not impacted by flood or the hurricane whatsoever. What is the process in moving forward with those sales?
Yeah, you're totally right. They do get impacted. So what happens after you have a natural disaster? And this has been my experience. We've all had closings delayed. If you're a newer agent, don't be surprised. It's going to happen. When you have a natural disaster, once FEMA starts to declare it a natural disaster within the state of Florida, for example, once they declare it and they start assessing the damage on the forefront, they start creating a list, a natural disaster affected area county list. So let's say we're in Tampa countryside area, so Hillsborough County. If FEMA now has Hillsborough County on this, their declared disaster zone, then if you're under contract on a home, you're an agent or you're a buyer, if the appraisal's already happened, you're going to need to have a re-inspection. The appraiser is going to have to go back out, and there's a certain form that has to be filled out called a 1004D, and it's a disaster inspection report. It's going to confirm that with pictures and the report that there was no damage to the collateral that the mortgage lender is lending on. And Hillsborough County, for example, Chris, as you know, is huge. So some areas were going to be impacted, some weren't, but it's just kind of a rule. If Hillsborough County is on the list, you need this reinspection. It's typically a buyer cost. usually around the $175 to $200 range, but it absolutely will be required. If the appraisal hasn't happened though, then it will, that form, that information will be included when the appraiser goes out the first time.
Right. So if you are a buyer that's under contract, who's your first point of contact? Who should you be contacting regarding all of this?
I think that's a great question. If you work with a trusted real estate and lender and loan advisor, you should probably have heard by that from them first.
Right.
You know, they're going to reach out to you. We are really collaborating in your corner to support you. You know, it's hard to say because what questions do you have? You know, certainly I'm one of those people, if you call me and it's maybe a contract question, hey, how does this impact those seller credits or the repairs that they negotiated? I'm going to say, hey, that's a great question. That's a Chris question. She negotiates that on the real estate agent side of the transaction. So it depends where you are, but definitely reach out if you haven't heard from your team already.
And you're right. You should have. You should have already heard from them. And another kind of interesting thing is that this does not create a legal basis for you to back out of a contract unless if the property was not affected. It's not like, oh, gee, I don't want to live in Florida now because of the natural disaster. It doesn't create a good reason to back out of the contract.
Okay, so this is interesting. See, now I see your lawyer brain coming into play. This is why it's always a collaborative effort. So, okay, so that's something that's going to be really important for buyers to note because that wouldn't impact me, right? On the mortgage side, I would keep processing the mortgage and having my processor work on it and get into underwriting. But you're saying if maybe an out-of-state buyer, they just want to back out, now they're trigger shy because they don't want to come into an area with a hurricane.
Yeah, they don't have a legal right to back out.
Ah.
They could do it without the legal right to back out and then lose their earnest money deposit if they're outside of their inspection period. Obviously, if they're within their inspection period, they can cancel for whatever reason.
Right.
And they will receive back their earnest money deposit. Because it is almost like a due diligence item where, you know, something like this happens and it has a material impact on whether or not you want to buy the home, or it could have it. But if you're not within your inspection period, it's too bad. You didn't research, you know, hurricanes.
Yeah. See, and that's something that's going to be really important to notice. And this is why I love these conversations, because I'm always learning new things. And even I've been in mortgages for 13 years. Things change on a daily basis. So I'm always open to having my mind change, learning new information. And so that's why I love these things, because I didn't know. And, you know, I always tell people, if buyers are like, well, I think I could do it on my own, like the for sale by owner, please do not do that ever. Real estate transactions are very complex. There's a lot of moving parts. You need a trusted advisor in your corner on the real estate side. But it's so interesting that you say that, because a lot of times you think you can navigate it yourself, or, oh, I got this. And, you know, I'm always like, listen, I see contracts every single day. It does not mean I can negotiate one.
Right. And I think that's an important distinction, is that, you know, there's especially when the whole buyer broker debacle came about, there were agents who said that, you know, a buyer doesn't have to use a real estate agent. And I said, yeah, if you get sued, you don't have to use a lawyer either. But the outcome's probably going to look a little different if you did use one. And so they were like, oh, so I at least from my experience know that, you know, when I do take part in the transaction, my client always gets a better deal than they would have on their own. I have never had a transaction where that didn't happen and the client didn't go like, oh, wow, like I would probably not have gotten that. It's kind of like the same thing as I am terrible at buying cars. Okay, like I don't
haggling.
I don't like haggling. I don't do it.
I'm
well.
Like, you want me to? I'll be on the phone with my husband. You want me to? What? You want me to stand up and pretend like I'm walking out? Like, I don't want to do that. Can I just be like, here's the number? Can we just get it done?
And this is why I love CarMax. Right? They don't negotiate on the price. It is what it is. It's on paper.
Okay, noted. I might go there next time I need a car.
Best experience ever. And so it's like, and you ask them, you're like, hey, is there any wiggle room? Nope, none. We've been like this for, I don't know, 7 years.
Yeah.
There's no haggling on it's the sticker price. I'm like, cool. Let's move forward.
Okay, great. Let's do. Well, you know, I think that is in my experience, that's an excellent way to do business. And I do it the same. I know that you operate the same way. As I'm going to be direct and transparent. I'm going to tell you real numbers. We're going to talk real numbers and real scenarios from the beginning. I think a lot of times, certainly one of the top three complaints with lenders is communication, or, oh, it was more expensive at the end than they said at the beginning. And it may not have really been. A lot of times it's a lack of communication.
Right. Right.
And stating things. And so that's why it's really important to work with local, reputable agents and lenders when you're buying a home, because it really makes a difference. You have your finger on the pulse of the market. You know, especially in Florida, you see a pre-approval letter from an out-of-state lender or a big bank, and they're like, no, check, please, unsubscribe, because it makes a difference who you work with and what kind of experience you're going to have. And also, do you feel comfortable with that person? You know, do you have buyers asking you questions and then you answer them and they feel comfortable and they feel supported? And I think it's, you know, being in this business that can be so transactional in nature, a lot of industry professionals, they lose that human touch and the humanity of it, you know? And so for buyers out there listening, like, you really got to be comfortable with who you're working with. If you can't get your agent on the phone to answer a question, imagine what the experience is going to be like when you're under a 30-day contract deadline and the days are clicking over. It's going to be a miserable experience. Moving is stressful enough.
Right.
You know?
And you really have to trust your agent to go to bat for you and try to get the best deal for you, because of course it's easier not to negotiate the deal. Yeah. Now, while I am terrible at negotiating on car prices, I'm really good at negotiating on real estate prices. And I had a transaction where the buyer really wanted the house.
Yeah.
And the seller was playing hardball. And so my buyer said, let's just pay them what they're asking. And I said, I think I can shave off at least 10 grand on it. And they debated, because they were like, no, we just want it. We just want it.
Right. We don't
care. Just pay them. And I said, all right, well, let me try to get 10 grand off of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we're going to do it in a speedy timeline so that we're not risking you not getting the property. And sure enough, they took the 10 grand amount less, and the buyer was super happy. It was like, oh my gosh, I get to spend 10 grand on something else now. And it would never have happened if they would have not had somebody in the middle, right? Like, if they had just been dealing directly with the seller, they would have said, okay, well, yeah, we'll just pay it.
Absolutely.
So it is a money-saving exercise as much as it is risk management and understanding what you're getting into.
100%. And I think that, Chris, illustrates a very good point, is people don't know what they don't know. They may say, okay, well, we don't want to do that. We don't care. We'll pay for it. Great. But guess what? You run it up the flagpole. 100% of the time, the answer is going to be no if you don't ask. So, hey, let's ask in a tactical negotiating way. You know, everything's a negotiation and you leave the door open, but it speaks a lot to the relationship that you create with your buyers and your clients, because I always tell people, 100% of the time, you're in the driver's seat, right? We do what you want to do. I can advise you, but ultimately, you're in the driver's seat.
I'm just the passenger, right?
Right. But that you invest in that relationship and they trust you to say, hey, listen, I think we should ask for this. We may get it. We may not get it. But if we don't ask, we're surely not going to get it. And what if we do get it? And in that case, you got the $10,000 off, and that's real money. Imagine handing over a stack of like $10,000.
Right.
That's real money for people. And that is where, in my experience, a lot of agents and lenders have pitfalls creating relationships with buyers, is because some people, they just, their mind may be made up, or they think that they're right, and they just want to hear what they want to hear. And then you get a professional that's just telling you what you want to hear, and that's not benefiting anyone.
Well, and that's actually a very interesting point, too, when it comes to using professionals that are knowledgeable. I had this scenario a couple of weeks ago where, incidentally, we're talking about flood insurance.
Yeah.
And it was somebody who bought the property less than 2 years ago. And I said, well, did you get transferable flood from the seller? And they looked at me like, what?
Right.
And they had insanely expensive flood insurance. Yeah. And I said, did your agent explain that if the seller had flood insurance, that it was transferable and that you could have maintained the same premium, mm-hmm. which is a big deal if it's older flood insurance, because those are priced completely differently than the new ones. And they looked at me and go, no. So, and that would have been good information to have.
Right.
So it just goes to your point of you don't know what you don't know.
Exactly.
Right?
Well, and there's, I think even as much as I deal with contracts and realtors all day long and transactions, I think in every industry, whether you're a truck driver or a nurse assistant or a nurse or a doctor or any profession, a teacher, I think that we all have our own lingo and our own acronyms and language that we speak. You know, I could never go and, I mean, I watch a lot of Law and Order. Does that mean that I'm a lawyer? No. You know what I mean? And
most people think that makes you a lawyer.
I used to be obsessed with Law and Order, but not so much anymore. I don't have a lot of free time to watch TV. But, you know, then people enter into transactions. And again, real estate, it's very complex. It's going to be great if no hiccups happen, but the chances that you may hit a little bit of a roadblock or a slight delay, having a team in your corner to support you and help you navigate that and really insulate you from the process, where you might think it's a bigger deal and you're like, ah, no problem. It's an outlet. We'll get it fixed. No big deal. So I think it's really, it makes a big difference. And I don't think that people realize it. I think especially now with the buyer broker agreement, some people know, I mean, unless you're really buying a house, do you really know? I don't think like the average person would, you know, we're all talking about it in our industry, but I don't think the average person's like, what about that NAR settlement?
Right.
You know, but it's going to come up if you are a buyer and you're entering in the market. You know, what have you seen so far as that?
Well, I think that basically, I think most of the issues are in the realtor's heads.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I think that most human beings understand that if they're getting a service, that they're going to have to pay for it. And the structure of any deal still allows you to get it from the seller, mm-hmm. as long as it's part of the purchase price. Now, this is where the huge disconnect is that, you know, the buyers are saying, well, seller has always paid it. Yeah, but whose pocket did that money come from? And then they really start thinking about it like, oh, it came from my pocket because it was part of the purchase price. Exactly. Like, it's always been paid by the buyer as part of the purchase price and then by the seller. It can still be structured like that.
Yeah.
And from a mortgage standpoint, it may be beneficial to do so, to just bake it into the purchase price. But it's still coming out of the buyer's pocket no matter what. And now what's different is it can be structured in a different way and it can bypass the listing broker and it can go directly from the seller to the buyer, or it can go directly from the buyer to the agent, to their own agent, without going through the seller at all, which then brings your purchase price down by the equivalent amount. It's the math works out to be exactly the same. And that's something that is really funny to watch sellers right now, where they're like thinking that they can take comps that included the commission for both sides, and then just say, well, my house is worth this. Like, no, if you're not paying that, then it's worth whatever percentage less, right? So the notion that somebody's going to end up making more money or saving money due to this settlement is just incorrect. It's not going to happen.
It is.
But I think it'll take about 6 months for them to start to
I think they're going to get it. And I think there was a lot leading up to it and agents were scared. And I agree with you. What is the only thing that's changed? You still have to advocate for your buyer. Now all you have to do is advocate your value to the buyer as well. Who doesn't get hired for a job that they don't apply for? You know what I mean? That they don't get interviewed for. And so it's just kind of one of those things where it's going to make a difference. People are either going to sink or they're going to swim. But, you know, you brought up a really good point, and you have to kind of look at it from a different point of view and reverse engineer it. You know, if you're an agent out there with a listing, what is the seller's bottom line? What do they need to net out of this transaction? And then once you have that fixed point in time, who cares how you have to structure the deal? if at the end of the day they're getting that bottom line number that they ultimately need, then it's fine. There's more than one way to skin a cat.
And that's another fun misconception, is that the value of a property would be somehow impacted by what the seller wants to make on it.
Right.
Because it's not. you know? It's like they can say all day long that they need to make $500K on it.
Right.
But if the numbers don't make sense,
they're
not going to hit that number. It doesn't matter. It's like a child, you know, going like, I want the strawberry ice cream, but there's no strawberry ice cream left. And then they're like, it just keeps saying they want
100.
It.
The math has to math, and real math, not girl math.
Right. Ooh, that's offensive.
I mean, we do it though.
This is true. We'll cut a little corner here and there and get to the point.
Or like you reverse it and you're like, all right, if I got to be there by 8:30, then I got to have the kids packed by the, you know, I digress. But yes, real math here we're talking.
So let's talk a little bit about the mortgage process, getting pre-qualified, pulling your credit, how that impacts everything. I think one of the things where we have made an effort as agents now due to the NAR settlement is we outline in the very beginning of the process what our value is, like, and also what the process of purchasing a home looks like and all the facets that have to do with it. Because a lot of the time the buyer just doesn't understand the complexity of it. And also another good point, I think, is the fact that we know what the industry standard is and what is common when it comes to what kind of repairs the seller is likely to accept to do.
Yeah.
And all these things where if you're doing it as a one-off, you have no idea. You have no idea if that would be a normal request or an abnormal request, right? And also you have to look one step ahead of that and understand what is the consequence of that. Like if I ask for XYZ,
right,
what can the other party then do?
Right.
Do they have a right to cancel? Do they, what is the likely outcome? So strategically figuring out what to do with somebody who's done it, who does it all day, every day, is different than doing a one-off and trying to figure out how to navigate that.
It is. And I think it's really important. And that's, I'm glad you brought that up because it's so important. And we're aligned in that you have to enter into a transaction as a buyer or as an agent and really put yourself in that buyer's position. You know, for the average consumer, you may only buy one or two homes a year. For an industry professional, we're doing tons of transactions. So there's a level of automaticity, but we really have to break it down to people that don't understand it. You don't go through this process all the time. It's very overwhelming. And so that's where I align with you, because from the outset, you're direct and transparent and you let people know what the next step is. You know, even for example, people don't mind bad news. They don't like surprises.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's, if you let me know, hey, we may come across this, we'll cross that bridge if we get to it, we've got a workaround, but to really help them navigate next steps. So, and that's something that I'm passionate about as well, and I know you are with your background, highly educated, is educating the investor, the first-time home buyer, without all the industry jargon. I want you to get the answers that you're looking for. I want you to feel comfortable and supported throughout the process. So if we give you, to answer your question, if I kind of zoom out and give a bird's eye overview, it really starts with the lender. I believe the future home buyer, we have like 35 million, you know, millennials and Gen Zers turning home buyer age in the next couple few years, is the future home buyer is really, they're going to go to the lender first, right? Now they go to the realtor. It's a little bit antiquated. They see a house they like, the realtor's number is out front. They call them. Who does the realtor tell you to call? The lender, which is great. They always have trusted ones. But what you need to do first is go to the lender, who's a great loan advisor, is going to help you establish your budget, right? And then align your buying power with your goals. Now it's a higher rate market. Home prices are appreciating, which is great, but affordability is the problem. Are you comfortable with the monthly mortgage payment? I know that there's a lot of talk about rates. I know we're going to get into that, but are you comfortable with the monthly payment? Because if you are, make the offer on the house. The house is not going to wait for you. You know, if rates drop, great. But if they don't, you're comfortable with the monthly mortgage payment. So you talk with the lender. They will help you establish your ceiling, the maximum you can get pre-approved for. Then you align your buying power with your goals. We kind of reverse engineer. You know, mortgages are not you pull off the same can of Campbell's soup off the shelf and it fits everyone. Everyone's income, credit profile, everything is different. So you can really, as a loan advisor, reverse engineer and tailor the loan to fit their needs. So you talk with the lender, you get pre-approved. The pre-approval process will determine three things. One, the maximum purchase price you can qualify for. Two, approximate out-of-pocket costs. And three, your approximate monthly mortgage payment. I know there is a lot of talk, you mentioned pre-approval versus pre-qualification. People use those terms interchangeably. It doesn't matter what you call it, what you have been calling it. It matters, have you provided your income documents to the lender? One of the reasons why I'm one of the most reputable lenders in the country is because I do a thorough income and credit review and analysis so that you don't find your dream home, go under contract, and now we have underwriting problems because maybe your income's not quite where it was or the insurance is a little higher than it we anticipated, and then there's problems. So you get pre-approved. Then you go, and now the ball's in your court. Now you work your magic. You know, they usually have 90 days to house hunt until the pre-approval letters expire. And that's when you really work on, hey, what do I want in a house? What are my deal breakers? What are things that I'm willing to compromise on? And then once you find a home, go under contract, get an accepted offer in the reverse order, then you circle back to the lender to start the mortgage process.
So let's just make the distinction here for a second between the pre-qualification and the pre-approval. So pre-qualification is something that when somebody's just starting out to look at homes, that's what they should obtain in the very minimum so that they know at least a ballpark of where they should be landing, right? And does that involve a credit check or not?
I think that that's a great question. My advice is always go for the pre-approval. So the difference, if we're talking definitions, a pre-qualification is you're a home buyer, you call me as the lender, and we have a conversation. Hey, I make this. Okay, my credit is this. I make this much money, whatever the case may be. We have a conversation, and I as lender are like, yeah, all right, sounds good. Yeah, sounds like you could probably be able to do something. That sounds good. But there's no exchange of documentation or anything like that. So that's where the issue comes, is everyone's income is different. So the pre-qualification is you have a conversation and the lender says, hey, that sounds good. But when you advance to the actual pre-approval stage, ideally you provide income documentation. A credit check is required, whether a soft credit review or a hard credit inquiry. I mean, a hard one is needed if you're obtaining a mortgage, you're trying to get a loan for hundreds of thousands of dollars typically, you know. And I will bring up a misconception with credit is a lot of people say, well, I don't want my credit pulled because I don't want it to have a negative impact on my scores. And this is very important. Financial literacy is self-taught. They don't teach it in schools. We either got to go find professionals to learn from or, you know, YouTube University. But a misconception with credit pulls is the credit bureaus. So for mortgage lending purposes, there are three credit bureaus. We go off of the middle score. But the credit bureaus know that for the average home buyer, it's likely the biggest investment they're ever going to make. So from the time that you have your a hard credit inquiry, you have your credit pulled by a mortgage lender the first time, you have a short window of time where you can have subsequent pulls by other mortgage lenders without having a negative impact. They know it's a big investment. The credit bureaus know, they know that you're likely to shop around. So the first credit inquiry will ding your credit a little bit, but the subsequent ones within a short window of time won't
just
have any negative
impact.
Typically
3 weeks, right?
Yeah, they're not going to penalize you. So I think that that's important, but it's kind of like, and you probably get this in your discovery call, it's kind of like, you know, someone coming in, hey, what are the rates and what can I be pre-approved for? And you're like, okay, so you're basically asking me to scrub in for surgery. I don't have an x-ray. I don't have an MRI scan. I don't have a chart. I don't even know what your symptoms are. And you're like, put me under, doc, you know? So it's really important to navigate the process and be as forthcoming as you can.
And I think that's an excellent point, is this is in a competitive market. What I have seen lenders sometimes do, and I don't endorse these lenders, is they get a call from a potential buyer and they want to know where the interest rates are at. And so they give a very rosy picture of where the interest rates are at, which has no basis on reality at all. The objective of that conversation from the lender's point of view is to try to sway them to use them as the lender. Then when you go under contract and you submit the actual mortgage application, what happens with the interest rate? It goes from here to here.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, you know, interest rates change daily and whatnot. But the bottom line is they misinformed them in the original conversation to try to beat other lenders because it's not based on anything. Like you said, there's no surgery happening yet. And so they're not locked into whatever they verbally said. And oftentimes they deliberately misinform the consumer at that point just to try to win over that business. The jankiest one I've seen, sorry for using the word janky, but the jankiest one I've ever seen was a company that went through a full pre-approval process and full underwriting process in advance. And what they did was they promised that because you did this whole underwriting process, they would be able to close in 2 weeks. So here the buyer goes under contract. This is good. They go, yay, I can do it in 2 weeks. And now the interest rate gets jacked up substantially. And in this case, the one I remember, it was a full percent over market interest rate, a full percent. Yeah. And they were banking on the fact that no other lender could step in because the closing period was so short. And the buyer had agreed to that because it was a selling point for them to win, win the bidding war, which in this case there was one, was at the time when the market was pretty crazy. And so I looked at the documents and I go, oh, no. And no, this is not happening. So I called around to my trusted lenders and I found one that could close it in 2 weeks. And they got more than a point off the interest rate. And it was just, you know, one of those things where then the lender calls me or the mortgage, what do you call them?
The mortgage officer, mortgage professional. I don't know. Should we even call them a mortgage professional? No, in that we're going to call them. Sound very good.
Mortgage unprofessional. The loan officer calls me and you know wants to know why we're not moving forward. And I said, well, bust out the interest rate you gave them, and that's just criminal. You know, that's just criminal for you to market yourself as being able to close this quickly because they went through underwriting with you, and then jack up the interest rate through the roof. And so I said, you're on my blacklist. If anybody comes to me with a prequal from your company, we're not moving forward. I'm getting another one.
Yeah.
And so.
Well, and everyone has those lists. You think that they don't have the list. There's the list.
There's the list.
Or if you get if you're a listing agent and you get an offer with the agent and you've had a bad experience with them and their lender, like, everyone has a list. So work with someone local and reputable. But that is such a great point. And it goes back to, in my opinion, the directness and the transparency, right? Because I'm giving them all of that information at the outset. A lot of lenders, they do that. Or you go online and you see, we call them teaser rates, right? What sounds more appealing, a 5.99 or a 7.625? You know what I mean? So a lot of lenders, they advertise or they'll tell you directly the teaser rate, the lowest rate, the lowest cash to close.
Which involves a buy down, right?
Right.
A lot of the time they're advertising a rate that involves a buy down. And then you tell the buyer, like, you need to compare apples to apples. Mm-hmm. So if one is an interest rate with no buy down, and the one is with a $20,000 buy down, guess what? The one with a higher interest rate can also do a $20,000 buy down. You just need to see where the rate lands if that's what you want to do.
Or what is the difference? Because you're going to pay $20,000 to buy it down now, but in 12 to 18 months when the rates drop, you're just going to refinance anyways. So how long? So you're going to shell out $20,000 now. What is your monthly savings going to be between the buy down rate and the rate you get when you refinance or no buy down rate, right? What's that monthly savings and how long is it going to take you to recoup? You know, if you're saving $100 a month and you've shelled out $20,000 in cold hard cash, you're not recouping that before you refinance. You're not recouping that for years. So I think those teaser rates and the, you know, it may not even be the buy down rates. It could be that those are for the 800 credit score borrower with 20% down, conventional, you know, every, it's the best of the best. It's the new shiny penny, and everyone doesn't fit into that box. You know, it could be something where, hey, I pre-approved you 3 months ago, but not explaining that if you're not ready until 3 months from now, it's going to be a different market, mm-hmm. you know. But you're right, people do that, and it's ultimately just kind of a race to the bottom, and they want to get them in the door. But you have to have some integrity mm-hmm. with the process. And for me, I overestimate everything, because the problem is with the human psyche, like if I tell someone your cash to close is going to be $10,000 and it ends up being 15, you're always going to have that $10,000 number stuck in your head. I'd rather tell you 15 and then it comes in at 9 and everyone's happy. I mean, you have to experience the same thing. Like if you're, and this is one of the advantages of being pre-approved before you house hunt, because you know your budget. Tell me you haven't taken those buyers to look at these homes and they're looking at these $500,000 homes, and then turns out they can only be pre-approved for $350,000. That $350,000 home is never going to meet the bar.
Yeah, everything's going to be a disappointment.
Yeah, it's never going to meet the mark. So why not go into it realistically?
Right.
You know?
Well, and that's what I always tell people, is that if we start shopping before you know what you qualify for, we might start at the wrong price point, and then everything's going to be a disappointment from there on out. Because yeah. in your mind, you're always going to compare to the first homes we saw that were in a different price point.
Yeah.
Also, when it comes to buy downs, this is why I'm such a huge fan of temporary buy downs, because you don't lose the money if you do a temporary buy down, a 3-2-1 or a 2-1 or whatever you do, and you happen to refinance during that period. Whatever is left is applied to the principal, which is an awesome, awesome product.
Yeah. So yeah, they're great, and they work for a lot of people. You know, another thing is working in tandem with your agent and your lender and making sure that they're asking you as a buyer these discovery questions. Hey, how long are you going to be in the home? Are you planning on selling it in a couple of years? May you transfer jobs? Are you going to, sometimes people, they go into a home, they live in it for a couple years, then they convert it to an investment property and upgrade and buy another one. So a lot of it depends on what are your goals. Because again, mortgages, you negotiating a contract, it's not one size fits all. It's what is your situation? Are you an empty nester downsizing your family? Are you a growing family, you know, a growing young family? Are you fresh out of college? There's so many components that come into it that are outside of the numbers and the contract as well that have to be considered, in my opinion.
Well, and right now when it comes to the mortgage, I think the key question is, do we expect interest rates to still come down? And if so, we should be prepared that you are likely going to refinance within the next few years if the interest rates do come down.
Yeah.
Now, they have come down recently quite a bit, right? Mm-hmm. So tell Good me a news. Little bit Yay. About, I know, right?
Yeah, so when are we recording this? Beginning of October, 2024. So the Fed did cut the rate cut by 0.5 in September, and everybody got, woohoo, you see all these posts. That does not immediately impact mortgage rates, the Fed rate cut, right? One is tied to long-term interest, another is tied to short-term interest. But what it means is we have turned the corner. I mean, you know this, Chris. There was a period of time a couple of years ago, we had 11 consecutive rate hikes. I mean, that's insane.
Yes.
You know, so the good news is we've turned the corner. Now they're trending downward, and they'll continue to trend downward. Again, mortgage rates aren't going to immediately be impacted. Just because the Fed rate cut was 0.5 less does not mean that mortgage rates dropped by 0.5, but we've turned the corner. So now they're going to continue on the decline. Of course, none of us have a crystal ball being in this. If we did, we'd be sitting pretty. But, you know, we don't have a crystal bar. They are projected to drop again in November. But I think really by mid 2025, we're going to get a clear understanding of, are they going to continue to decline, Or are we going to kind of plateau and stabilize a little bit? So I think that's something to be considered as well. Like, hey, if you are comfortable with the monthly payment now, knowing that you're going to refinance in 12 to 18 months, is work with professionals that are going to help you strategize that timeline, you know, because for example, you work with a loan officer in a big bank, you're never hearing from that loan officer after you close.
Well, and I think that that brings me to the next point we talked about earlier, communication. Mm-hmm. And from a real estate professional standpoint, I found it really interesting. I spoke with a very successful agent, and he was telling me that when he was in the process of selling a home for his client, you know, they listed it, they went under contract, and then there was a 30-day escrow.
Yeah.
And the seller contacted the agent about 2 weeks into it and said, why haven't I heard from you? And the agent says, well, we're in escrow and we're just waiting for the loan approval. And the client said, well, I understand that, but this is not something we do every day. So we would expect you to reach out every week and tell us where we're at and what's happening next, and not have this really lengthy period, because 30 days is a long time.
That's quite a long time.
So that was a good lesson that he shared, that he learned, was he contacts the client every week, even if it's just to say hello, nothing's happened, we're still moving forward. He still reaches out and does that communication. And I think that's where a lot of people, that's where you can really shine, is you do your consistent communication with the client, even if you don't have a lot to share or say, you just update them.
Right.
And so in the mortgage process as well, it seems like there's always a little lull here and there, right, where nothing major might be happening. You might be waiting for the appraisal or whatnot. But the fact that you hear from your loan officer and that they keep you updated and just you understand that this is under control and not in some sort of black hole, I think that is imperative to having a satisfied customer at the end of the day.
Well, you know, I completely agree with you, and I love your mindset, because that's how you and I think. The average agent is not thinking like that. Like, we think that's normal. We think it's egregious to not reach out and where are we and hear something. And most people are not doing that. If you're an agent listening to this, that is what is going to set you apart almost single-handedly. You know what I mean? And you don't have to have all the answers. There's power in saying, hey, I don't know the answer to that question yet, but I'll find out and get back to you. You know, when it goes into the overall buyer experience, you know, how is it going to be if you refer me a buyer and then they're texting you, oh, you told me that lady Rebecca is going to call me and I haven't heard from her. That doesn't make any of us look good. It does not make the buyer feel supported, right? And so,
or important.
Exactly. It's just, and I don't understand. And I mentioned it before, it's one of the main complaints of loan officers, from buyers, from realtor partners, is communication. And it's something so simple and it goes such a long way. Like, for example, I do for my pipeline, all my files in process, I do a Tuesday update. I do it myself. I don't have my team do it. I do it myself. Before noon, I call the buyer, the listing agent, and the buyer's agent every Tuesday, so that they know on a weekly basis where we are, what's the status as far as underwriting, appraisal, on track to closing. Because you know what? It's a domino effect that I don't think many people realize. Because if the listing agent hasn't heard anything, they're calling the buyer's agent. And then the buyer's agent is calling me, the lender, and all we want to do is headed into the long weekend. We want to reassure the seller that everything's fine. The buyer's agent, hey, I've talked to the buyer, I got the docs, and everybody's on the same page. So there's a domino effect that it can also be very efficient and a huge time saver. If you're an agent working a transaction, building your pipeline, once you start getting busier and busier, you have to work smarter and not harder. And with a little tweak in communication, it goes a long, long, long way.
That's another interesting point when it comes to integrity and transparency. Something I've noticed is that there's some lenders who will tell you the day of closing that there's a problem with the financing. And my reaction is always, there is no way you figured this out today. Like, why were we not
what
informed?
What planet are we on here?
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I've seen that happen in Florida more than other states, where last day, day before closing or day of closing, lender reaches out and said, oh, whoopsie, they didn't qualify. And I just find that atrocious. Like, why would you string along a seller? Because what's going to happen is they're going to end up on my blacklist. Anytime I see that lender's paperwork anywhere, I'm like, nope, get another lender.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that that's a good point. And there are a few things that happen, right? So like some insight from the mortgage lending side of it. I think that quite a few things happen in that scenario. So you're, as an agent, the lender that you partner with, the team that you build, the title company, the inspector, you have to have a solid, trusted team. Otherwise, we're always fact-checking and swerving into each other's lanes, checking each other's work. Why? I don't want to do that. I know that you've got your side of the street clean. I'm working on mine. The title company has theirs. So you really need to build a trusted team. But, you know, a number of things happen is, one, you know, you have loan officers that work at big banks. It's, they have a revolving door of applicants. They have to close, they're closing 20, 30 loans and making like $4,000 or $5,000. There's no sense of urgency. They have zero control over the process. Then it gets kicked over to the processor, then the underwriter. They have no control. So they're not really invested in it. You know what I mean? My business is 100% referral based. Every time I issue a pre-approval letter, that's my reputation on the line. You know, I'm not a W-2 employee. I don't get a salary. You know, we're 100% commission based. So I think that's a big part of it, is they just don't have control. Another thing is, sometimes loan officers, they don't have, you know, your loan experience and your home buying experience is only going to be as good as the agent and the loan officer you're working with. If you have one that doesn't really know underwriting guidelines, doesn't know how to calculate income from tax returns because you have a self-employed individual, it's not going to be a great experience and things are going to be missed. And then there's just, quite frankly, those people that they don't prioritize you. They don't get, they get busy. It may fall by the wayside. And then they want to avoid an uncomfortable conversation. But I mean, circling back to where kind of we started this conversation is, I don't mind bad news, but I don't want surprises. Mm-hmm. You know, so do you think it's going to be worse telling me when we still have 2 weeks to figure it out than we're supposed to close tomorrow and I've got a buyer with a moving truck scheduled?
Right.
No, they just want to avoid an uncomfortable conversation because they think that everyone's going to be mad. But listen,
you're going to be a lot worse.
It's going to be a lot worse for you. And you don't want to go that way. So it does, you know, lend into integrity and really working with trusted people, because that's not going to garner you any business. That's not going to garner you a great reputation or, you know, give you as an agent a warm and fuzzy feeling to want to work with that lender again. And ultimately, we all have the same goal. You know, we're ushering people into the next chapter of their lives, building wealth through real estate and buying homes. So, you know, it's not, I'm a firm believer of, it's not what you tell people, it's how you make them feel.
Well, and I think that's a great point too, is that there really is a difference between working with somebody who is a little bit creative and not creative. Some of the people that are real low on the totem pole again and are working for a big organization and they're doing the bare minimum, they're not going to give any thought to whether or not there is a workaround or any sort of creativity. Yeah. Whereas working with somebody like you is, it, there's a world of difference between, all right, let's troubleshoot this. Let's figure out a solution. Right. Is there a workaround? How can we get this done? And there's more of a motivation, I would say, and a drive to accomplish what you're looking for instead of moving on to the next file.
Right. Well, there's also a component of, they may not know enough. They may not have the experience. How many, it's kind of like cutting your teeth, right? Like, you can't go into a courtroom and litigate and it's a slam dunk. Like, you have to practice. You have to see a lot of deals over a lot of years and have a lot of experience. So sometimes it's, if you have limited experience or you've only ever done one, troubleshooting problem files, it's kind of like a puzzle. Right. And it's, you learn more, and I think it's reflective of life. Like, you learn more from your failures and your challenges than you do when everything goes smoothly.
Oh,
you know,
for sure.
So it's really who, like, I don't take no for an answer. I have, if I'm fight, when I fight underwriting, underwriting things, it's because, like, I really believe in it and I know that I'm right. I don't take the first no. Seven people have to tell me no and cite the same exact reason before I give up and concede.
And then you'll find a different way to do it.
Absolutely. Because there, we all operate, right, in the box. I'm not committing mortgage fraud or putting my license on the line for anyone. But there is a box. And you know what? There's more than one ways to skin a cat. Sometimes you have to be a little creative and think outside of the box, approach it from a different way, and solve the puzzle and solve the problem. I mean, there are a myriad loan products out there for a reason. You just have to find the right professional. It's kind of like you guys being a matchmaker. They're matching the right property with the right person. We got to match the right financing scenario to the right person to not only get the deal done and get them into the home, but also that aligns with their goals and their buying power and what's headed down the pike for them in the future. So sometimes I think it does take a lot of critical thinking and, again, communication. Like, I pre-underwrite all of my pre-approval letters. Like, my conversion ratio is 97%. That loan, if it doesn't close, it's something out of my control. The buyer lost their job, they spent their money, the appraisal came in low, you can't renegotiate. Like, they're rock solid because I'm anticipating what is going to happen in underwriting. I'm three steps ahead of it. Hey, we may come up against this. If we do, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, but I've got a workaround. Sometimes I've got two in my back pocket, but there's never going to be a surprise about it.
All right. Well, it's all about avoiding surprises and getting stuff done, right?
I mean, really, what more is there really to life, Chris? Right. But I want to ask you, what do you think on the heels of the hurricane? There, we've covered a lot in this last hour, right? So we have now the hurricane that's affected us in the Southeast region. It's a weird year. We got rates all over the place, the NAR settlement. It's an election year. What I want to know, because this is how I learn and get better, what are you seeing? What do you think is going to happen with some of these property values? What do you think is going to happen from a negotiation standpoint and buyers entering the market now that rates are going to be lower when they've been sidelined and completely priced out?
Yeah, I think that with the rates declining, there's certainly a number of buyers that are going to be activating again. And I think something that they're not really thinking about is the lower the rates get, the higher the prices are going to get because the more competitive it's going to get as well. So I think there's always a balance to the real estate market.
Yeah.
Some people are going to be selling a lot of waterfront homes right now. I was just talking to one of my neighbors, and she said that one of the homes that got destroyed on St. Pete Beach, the owner just went and bought a new one and said, I'm done. And a lot of people don't want to deal with it. So there's definitely going to be a little bit of an impact when it comes to selling properties that are on the water.
Yeah.
What are they worth right now? It always will rebound at some point where it's like, oh, that was a 100-year storm. Okay, this is not an everyday thing. But right now it's very fresh. The destruction is very fresh on everybody's mind. So it's definitely going to impact the waterfront properties for a while. And when it comes to the buyers on the sideline, they're starting to move forward. And every industry professional is telling them, don't wait too long, because the longer you wait, the more buyers are going to enter, the more you're going to pay for your home. Is it smarter to pay less for the home and then refinance when the interest rates come down? Absolutely. Because you're getting the property for a lower amount.
Yeah.
If you're moving when the others are still on the sidelines.
100%. Well, you're also a homeowner. You're building equity. Right. And then all of this chaos is going to ensue when the rates drop and all of these pent up buyers, all this demand floods the market, and you're insulated. You're sitting pretty. You might be paying 100-something extra bucks a month on your mortgage payment until you can refinance, but you're in the home.
Right.
You're a homeowner. You own the property. You're building equity.
And that's the other thing, too, is that which brings us to the point of whether or not people should be utilizing professionals or not, is the more competitive the market is, the more you need somebody who can get you the home.
Yeah.
I think that if when the market starts getting real tough, your negotiating skills, your ability to win over the listing agent and have them advocate for you and your buyer becomes increasingly important.
Yeah.
And the agents who were just writing up offers and sending them in, they would never get the property. It's all about the communication and the negotiation and really getting on the same page. And it also, unfortunately, has a little bit to do with whether or not the listing agent liked you.
Well, I think that is so true. And I think it affects a couple of areas. You know, a lot, because it happens on the lending side as well, is there's a lot of professionals we call, they're just order takers. You as the buyer say it, and then they write the offer, and then they wonder. And I've had a lot of buyers come, and they're like, listen, we've made all these, they're discouraged, and they're almost hopeless because they've made offers, they're not getting anything, or the agent that they're working with, they don't feel heard. They're like, I've told her what I want, and she keeps sending me homes that are like nothing like the things that I've asked for. And so I think as agents and loan officers, we have to listen to our clients. What do they want? But then also know we're the professionals for a reason. We have to go and we have to get that information. We can just say, I don't know, buyer, what do you want to offer? Like, you probably have good stories about this. It kills me when people go, and in this market, and I don't know, I don't have access to the MLS. I'm just the nerd behind the number crunching screen. But I think homes are priced generally pretty well, right? If they're priced well, they move. It kills me when I get buyers and they're pre-approved and they can afford it. And then they're like, well, I'm going to have my agent, you know, offer $60,000 less. I'm like, you're going to have them submit such a lowball offer. You might as well just go and slap them in the face while you give it to them. Like, that's not where the market is. And that's something that an agent and a professional has to advise you on. Remember when it was like the seller's market and the sellers, they're making all this money and it's crazy competitive. And then 6-8 months later, it wasn't that market anymore. And now the neighbor wants to sell and they think they're going to sell the home for what the other neighbor sold. Or the buyers think that, oh, the rates are so high. Newsflash, rates are not that high. When Jimmy Carter was president in the 80s, interest rates were like 17%. My husband's been in mortgages since the early 2000s. He refinanced my brother-in-law, I think it was, into like an 8-something%, and that was a deal. So the problem is that these buyers are not getting it's a different generation. It's a different wave of buyers. And everyone's point of reference and relativity is the 2% and 3% interest rates. We're never going to see those again in our lifetime. 2% and 3%, you are borrowing money for free. What is the average car loan? I don't know, probably 7-8%. What are your credit card APRs? 29-30% minimum. You know what I mean? 2% and 3% is borrowing money for free. So they'll come down, but they're not coming down to 2% and 3% again. And so you have to shift your perspective.
Yeah, it's definitely something that is in your head, right? But also, if you own a home and you have a 2-3%, really consider keeping it as an investment property and renting it out if you can afford, if you can qualify to buy another home and just keep that income coming, because that is an asset that will continue to appreciate more than likely. And you have your free money loaned on it.
Oh, it's 100% true. And I tell people, you know, sometimes we have to, as professionals, encourage them to shift their perspective. Some buyers, for example, they've got their money in a 401k. Well, you can take that money out, whether it's a loan or a withdrawal, borrow money against yourself to purchase a primary residence. Some people don't know that you can do that. But here's the other thing. You're pulling it out of your 401k. You're pulling it out as cash. Cash right now is a depreciating asset. And you're investing it in real estate, which is an appreciating asset right now. So to me, it's not even a lateral investment. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You're reinvesting it into something that's appreciating. And I'll tell you something. I had a gentleman, a family, they were buying a second home. and they were using some retirement funds. He had one of his retirement funds, Chris, $250,000. And we have to get the statements and, you know, gathering the underwriting documents. And over a quarter, he had lost just shy of $25,000 because your 401ks are tied to the stock market, mm-hmm. right? That is like taking a car and crumpling it up and throwing it out the window into the trash can. You know what I mean? That's crazy. Mm-hmm. That's and you a lot just of money. Lost that, and you work to do that. So sometimes, you know, you have to encourage people to think about it and approach it from a different objective. Because again, the average person, they're not investing in a lot of real estate, and so we as professionals have to take it very seriously to educate these people. Ultimately, the decision is theirs, but we have to educate them and let them know and communicate what are the next steps. Why are we negotiating this? Why it's important to talk to a local reputable lender. I have one woman at a very competitive price point right now make an offer. She was one of the top two contending offers. They went with the other one. You know why? It was a big out-of-state bank.
They just didn't want to work with them.
They don't want to work with them. Yeah. Because as a listing agent, you and the seller, whoever's on the pre-approval letter, they're relying on that mortgage professional to get the deal done.
That's also on the agent, though. You should be able to figure out how to communicate that you're going to be either switching lenders or working with a reputable lender yeah. or whatever it may be. Like, you shouldn't be going around putting in offers if
that. No. Well, I think in that situation, I think the buyer was maybe staunch on using hers and then didn't really, because a lot of people, like, I think a lot of what they say about Florida is true. We're kind of like our own little microcosm down here in this corner of the country. But, you know, we have a lot of people, out-of-state investors, wanting to come down. Everyone likes to say, oh, we live where you vacation. But it is very different. You know what I mean? Just because I could hold a mortgage license in Ohio, I couldn't even tell you two counties in Ohio. Mm-hmm. How would I have my finger on the pulse of what a condo insurance would require in Ohio or what the property taxes would be at a certain price point? I would have no idea, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's, the converse happens down here, and people really, they want to work with local, reputable people.
And that brings me to another interesting point, which is, you know, there's a difference between educating your buyer and pushing them to what is the easy solution from your perspective.
Yeah.
And a lot of realtors don't distinct between the two.
Yeah.
They will push their client to pay more money for the property, sometimes more than it's worth. Yeah. Because it's easier for them. It makes the offer more likely to get accepted mm-hmm. and go under contract, and it's just easier. And I approach it from the opposite point of view. For me, there's a little bit of satisfaction that I get from the win of getting it at the lower price yeah. point. And for me, it needs to be what I like to call yeah. the pain point of the seller. The absolute lowest number that'll go to, just a smidgen lower than that.
We just
want it
to hurt like just a little bit, just enough to know that I've edged it out. And listen, that's the name of the game.
Right.
That's where you excel at.
And it's all about figuring out where the seller's head is at.
Yeah.
And I always tell them to disregard whatever the number is that's on the list price. That's irrelevant.
Yeah.
Like, we need to figure out where the seller's head is at.
Right.
And then start working towards a number that they will accept. But more often than not, you can figure out what that number is fairly quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're good at what you do. And I think that that goes back, especially as well as a lot of agents, because buyers don't know. They're relying on you, right, to guide them through. Is a lot of people, they just want to tell, you know, where we approach it from a way where we ask, and mm-hmm. then guide.
Yeah.
You know, nobody wants to be told what to do. Hey, here's what it is. Here's how it works. Here's my recommendation. But what do you want to do? Do you have any questions, concerns, thoughts, feedback on any of that? What are you comfortable with? And I did the same thing just yesterday. I had a very open conversation. Someone, she wanted to negotiate a lower purchase price because there were some repairs on the inspection report they weren't going to impact homeowners insurance. The appraisal hadn't happened. I think a couple of them would have come up on insurance, but she wanted to do it instead of, and I said, okay, but how it works is if you get a lower purchase price now and some of those do come up on the appraisal, then who's going to pay for that? Are you going to pay for those out of pocket? Just so you know. So I said, think on it, whatever you want to do. You know, I defer to the agent, but that's how it will work and play out. And she called me the next day and said, oh, thank you so much. I'm going to go forward and ask for, you know, the $10,000 off. Great. But you know what? You know now. You're empowered with the information that you need to make the best decision for yourself. And that's really going to be the difference. And I know you here at Realty One Group Beyond are heavily invested in training your agents and giving them all the tools and all the resources that they need to be successful. They don't get that level of mentorship and guidance and training from, quite frankly, almost every other brokerage that I have experience with, which I commend you for that. But truly, because in this, we have so many people, I don't know what they think. They think getting their real estate license and dressing cute, the leads are going to fall from heaven like manna and it's going to be selling sunset. And it's not. It's a grind.
It's a grind.
And you have to really hone your craft. And so where I commend you for that is your agents are going to be the ones that are going to rise to the top because they're going to be the ones to be able to articulate to this next wave of buyers their value over their services. Your services is creating a CMA, a comparative market analysis, driving around, unlocking lockboxes, you know, doing the dot loop stuff. But the value is what differentiates them as a real estate advisor.
Right, and what the outcome is. Mm-hmm. If the outcome looks different,
right,
and is if your value is positive, even with the fee that they pay for your service, they still saved money,
yeah,
and they still got a better outcome, or they got the house they really wanted and would have been unable to otherwise get.
Yeah,
that's where your value lies. I think it's funny too when you have a multi-million-dollar buyer, and I always remind the agents when it comes to educating a multi-million-dollar buyer that they're rich for a reason. The cash buyers are by far, I think, the funniest ones who have like $12 million chilling in their bank account.
Yeah.
And the real estate advisor thinks they can go and advise them.
Right.
I always remind them, I said, let's just bear in mind that there's only one person in the house who can afford to buy it, and it ain't you.
Right.
And it ain't me. So let's give a little credit to the person who has accumulated this level of wealth and understand that they are extremely smart.
Yeah.
So don't come across as, oh, I'm the expert. Let me tell you.
No. Just,
let me tell you how this goes. Like, ask the questions, see where you can add value. Sometimes they're even a little patronizing where they think it's really cute that you're offering some advice on something that they full well know. I usually take the approach, like, you probably know all this.
Same.
You know.
But just give me a little grace. You know this by investing, you know, before.
And they're usually excellent negotiators as well.
Yeah.
And I always remind them, I said, listen, you're an excellent negotiator. You know where this is going to kind of end up. I will tell you that because I negotiate real estate probably more often, that this and this and this are probably going to be relevant. You do with it at what you want. And again, reminding yourself, you're in the passenger seat. They're in the driver's seat. Let them decide what to do. And especially with the ones that are loaded, don't go patronizing them with advice, you know?
Well, you know what's funny with them too is they already know the number.
They
when
do.
You have that... When you reach that status and you've got the credit score and you've got the cash, you basically dictate the terms. So nobody's coming in there telling them anything. They know their ideal financing scenario, and all you have to do is ask enough questions to see if you can meet it or
not.
That's it. Because they already know. They're going into it. And, you know, that's a good point, too, is it's really a testament to how well we can work with people and mirror their communication style and meet them where they're at. If it's a first-time home buyer, we're going to take the time with you to show you the steps, hold your hand. Sometimes you get the numbers, guys. They don't want the fluff. They don't want to sit there and small talk with me. They don't care. It's down to business. One guy, I think I did a transaction. I talked to him like two times, and then he only wanted to text me. I was like, all right. You know, so it's like you have to meet people where they are, but you're not going to know. You have to ask, 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 and be an active listener, an active participator, not going in, this is what they should do. Because here's the thing.
Don't tell people what to do.
You can lead the horse to water. You can't make them drink. So I think agents, especially newer ones, in my experience, they get so, you hold on so tight and you're so attached to the outcome, where really, like, I stopped chasing the check a long time ago. Now I chase the relationship. You invest in the people, and I want ultimately what is best for the home buyer and my agent referral partner. You know, sometimes I have people and they come to me for a second opinion. I had one guy in particular referred to me, and he was under contract closing within a week on, like, I don't know, $1.2, $1.3 million house. And he got the same thing where the interest rate was higher and the other lender didn't explain why. And you know what? He just wanted to vent. Mm-hmm. And so, listen, I would have been happy to take the deal over, but I was like, John, it's okay. You got this. Just, I know it stinks, but this is probably what happened. I can't say, I'm not in the eyes, but it sounds like a lack of communication based on what you're telling me, but it's done. Next Tuesday, you will be drinking a Mai Tai on your tiki hut on your new back pool deck. So, you know, sometimes people just want to vent, and I'm not going to go, oh yeah, let me take it and start the deal over. I ultimately want what's best for people. You are in the home stretch, and if you just want to vent, I will be your emotional support human.
Oh, that's like, so funny.
Like, you know, I did. It's true. And I have, just as you go to bat for your buyers, I will go to bat for mine and my agents as well. I had one investor client, and there was a property that she had found before she had connected with her agent. And so she was considering going in for sale by owner. And I said, please don't do that. Like, use your agent. You have to. Well, I don't know. And there were a couple of breakdowns in communication. And I said, listen, I encourage you to go to your agent and have a conversation and have a transparent. People don't know the expectations that you have in your mind until you communicate it. They're a professional. Give them the opportunity to rectify and rise to the expectation that you have. And it might be a little bit of a vulnerable and an uncomfortable situation, but you probably can do this on your own. The title company and me as the lender, we're going to do a little bit of extra work, but you don't want to. There's no reason to, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's just things like that.
Oh, really? I had this conversation today with a seller that I referred to an agent that I know really well and is absolutely stellar. And the seller wasn't happy.
Yeah.
And I said, listen, pick up the phone.
Right.
And call the agent. And because she said she was, and I quote, not impressed.
Yeah.
And I said, listen, just pick up the phone and call him, give him feedback.
Right.
And she said, really? I said, absolutely.
Yes.
100,000%, because I know this agent. First of all, he's extremely receptive to feedback.
Yeah.
And secondly, he would be, you know, mortified if you were just unhappy and didn't communicate it. So communicate very clearly what your expectations are, what you want to see, and he will take it to heart. I guarantee it.
Yeah.
I said, he didn't earn this reputation by ignoring what his clients want. So just do it. So I think she did do it. So I need to follow up with her later today.
I think that's amazing. And you know what? First of all, we can all be adults and professional. But to give someone the opportunity, they don't know. None of us are mind readers.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I think that speaks to the open-mindedness of you leading your team and having those conversations, because you're really doing someone a disservice. It's like, I always think about, you know, the women, like, we go to the nail place and we're watching them file our nails the wrong way, and we hate the shape and we don't like the color and we don't say anything, and then we leave and we trash talk them and we never go back there. But you're watching them do it. Why not say, hey, I know you did 3 nails already, but I don't like that color. Can we start over? You are paying for a service.
Right.
We are here. You're paying for my mortgage expertise, your real estate expertise. Like, I encourage people, if I am the smartest person in the room, I'm in the wrong room.
Right. Exactly. Reminds me, my nails are not the shape I wanted them.
Oh, my, you see me hiding. My mine's broken. But I am always open to having my mind changed. And I'm open to you poking holes in my business. I always tell people, whenever new listing agents that I update on a new contract every Tuesday. I'm going to say at the end of this conversation, I'm going to ask you to rate me on a scale of 1 to 10. And you can't say 7 because that's a cop-out number. Because if it's 8, 9, hopefully it's not. I like a 10, but I like a little room for improvement too. Because if it's an 8, 9, or 10, I want to know that. And I got to take that feedback to my team. But if it's 6 or below, we got to know where we may be faltering. You know what I
mean?
Do
they still give you a 7?
No, they can't. Okay. I don't allow it. I get a lot of 9s. But it is, you know, it's important to go with that growth mindset.
Oh, of course.
You know?
And I think that's where a true professional really does stand out, is they are always receptive to feedback. And they're always understanding that there's room to improve no matter what.
Yeah. Oh, always. And, you know, and I know that this will probably resonate with you because you do so much training and everything here. And that's, like, I feel one of the cornerstones and pillars of why your brokerage and your team is so good, is I myself spent a lot of money this year investing in coaching. I get professionally coached by not one, but two of the top 1% loan originators in the country. And when you do that, it opens you up to, I do it to make myself better, a better professional, to be better for my agents, be better for my buyers. But it really kind of sets you apart because you don't think about yourself or maybe your insecurities or whatever it is. You start honing your craft and it becomes different. You start having different conversations, you know, and you're really able to advise people in a different, more well-rounded way.
Well, it doesn't matter what industry you're in. Coaching is something that brings you to the next level. Just getting that perspective, that feedback, and it's when it's really centered around you instead of being generic, that's where there's a big difference in terms of training or coaching.
Yeah, which is funny, and I'm excited about it. I'd never really considered coaching, and the more you kind of like work in a certain wavelength and frequency, you know, you realize, like, I mean, man, I'm sure you've probably been coached or mentored by someone. It's like you start talking with a lot of top producers and really successful people in any industry, especially real estate, and realize that they are currently or have been professionally coached. It just is a different level unlocked.
For sure. I could talk to you for hours and hours and hours, but we're going to call it a day today, and we're going to set up another time to have another podcast. It was an absolute pleasure having you here. Thank you, Rebecca. And you can give your final little pitch at the end of what you offer and what you can do.
Well, I can do it all. Residential mortgages, you know, do it all. Don't let the humor and high vibes fool you, because I am a mortgage athlete, but I'm really invested in people and I love helping. And I'm here to support. I like to pour into my agents. I like to pour into my home buyers and really be a true advisor as you. I think that, you know, real estate that we help people with, it's going to affect multiple aspects of their life and touch multiple aspects of their life. And so to really have a relationship that extends far beyond the closing table is what I'm passionate about. I just like helping.
Well, I think it's also important to note that getting the mortgage does not need to be boring. It can actually be fun. So.
Yeah, I mean, listen, mortgages are not sexy. So I got to make it fun. Like you were talking about buying a car. Nobody goes and buys a car and they go talk to the finance guy first. That is not fun. That is not sexy. They want to feel the buttery leather seats, take it for a test drive, see where their cup holders are. Like as a mom, I don't know, but I always travel with like 4 beverages. I always have to have a holder for everything. So, I mean, I get it. I try to make it fun and hopeful and empower people. Like, hey, maybe you can't afford it yet, but let's make a game plan and get you there. So, you know, if you're a buyer or an agent looking for help, reach out. You can find me on all social media platforms at Rebecca Larea.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Thanks, Chris.